in the latter stages of my career, particularly in the latter points of AFL and then with my little period in soccer, I think I confused the fuck out of everybody. I think I went too far.
Welcome to the Pace Your Performance podcast, the podcast that dives into the philosophies, ideas, and practices of some of the best practitioners in high-performance sport. This is the third time that Jason Webber has been on the Pace Your Performance podcast, and a recited little story just when we get going with Jason about the first time he did come on, and I was so hyped after speaking to him because he spouted some unbelievable knowledge, but the most impactful thing for me was his enthusiasm. And things have changed. Definitely his enthusiasm has not changed, but things have changed for him from being a high performance manager in the AFL to a high performance manager in A-League soccer over in Australia to now being a CEO and founder of SpeedSig. And it is this that we talk about on this episode of the podcast. So how do we use GPS and the inner workings of a GPS unit to actually understand how people run, not just how far people run? So a really interesting episode with Jason that we dive into and try to drag out all the info that he's gained over visiting so many different staff over the last couple of years with SpeedSig. So if you're interested in understanding how people run, not just how far they run, check out this episode with Jason Webber. You'll love it. This episode of the Pace of Performance podcast is sponsored by Vald. So I'm really proud to have Vald as a sponsor again. And after a recent visit to Vald HQ in Brisbane for their annual ValdCon event, it's incredible to see how far they've come as a company since I last visited at the start of 2018. So from a very humble office of less than 20 employees back then, it's amazing to see how far they've come. They now employ a global team of more than 200 that support clients across 100 countries, including many of the world's elite and professional sporting organizations. So an incredible rise to where they are now. So this is a huge testament to just the impact they're having across the industry with their innovation, but also continued commitment to support clients. So if you're a performance practitioner, you probably know all about Vald, but if not, I'd recommend that you check them out at valdperformance.com. This episode is also sponsored by TeamBuilder. TeamBuilder is a software for performance coaches around the world. The powerhouse platform increases efficiency, saves paper, and can handle any type of programming. It's the perfect fit for professional and academy teams, performance institutes, schools, and universities. TeamBuilder is full of tools that help coaches' needs. Multiple max tracking methods, 16 plus reports, evaluation testing, and goal setting, just to name a few. Coaches also have access to consultations with TeamBuilder's in-house sports scientist to help manage and analyze data. Head to teambuilder.com and sign up with promo code SPORTSMITH to start your 30-day free trial. So without further ado, over to the episode with Jason Webber. Jason Webber, welcome back to the Pacey Performance Podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Hey, Rob, good to be back, my friend. Very good to be back. Always a pleasure to have a chat with you.
Thank you very much. I'll take you back, and I've told you this before, I'll take you back, and you won't know this, but I recorded, I think it was episode 12, maybe 15, can't quite remember, when you first came on the podcast. It was my morning, I think, so it'll have been your evening, and you will have been at Fremantle, I think, at the time.
Probably, yeah. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And I was going to work after we'd spoken, and I don't think I've ever been as pumped up going to work as after speaking to you on that episode, from after that episode.
That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I've told so many people that. So, yeah, I appreciate you coming on back then. I was a no one. I'm still a no one. But yeah, it was back in the
day. I'm still a no one, mate. Don't worry about that. Well, let's hope we can get you pumped up again, Rob.
Absolutely.
Get the two bearded guys into it.
No doubt. And we've spoken a few times since then, so it's a pleasure to get you on officially on the podcast.
Yeah, and a fellow podcaster yourself as well.
Well, we're
trying. Darren Burgess and I are doing our little two coffees and a coach. It's just a chat. Like I was just saying to you before we came online, we often catch up and have a coffee online because he's in Adelaide. I'm in Perth. And one day we just said, why don't we record this? Someone might be interested. And people seem to be. And we're really not doing it in any sort of format other than we're trying to talk about what we see, what's happening out there, and use cases. Like we used a case out of the UFC the other day. Now, I've got no UFC experience, but the story resonated with elements of what we've done in sports. So it was worth as good chance to discuss hypothetically how would we handle XYZ situation. So yeah, that's what we're doing. Bit of fun. It's always a laugh talking to Bojo.
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. So we spoke a couple of times. What's the update since last time we spoke? So you're out of pro sport. Well, officially out of pro sport.
Well, in a way,
but involved as well. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, I've been out of pro sport officially since, it must be, I think I finished in Australian A-League probably mid-2022. I finished AFL 2020, but now I'm running my own little company, my little analytics company called SpeedSig.
Little for now.
SpeedSig.com, yep. And SpeedSig is basically we're using team's GPS units, like catapults, stats boards, player data, to derive biomechanical data, so running information about individual limbs, vertical, anterior, posterior, medial, lateral forces, thigh angular velocity, all the biomechanical features that we're talking about currently in the literature. We're able to derive most of those, and so we're in the process at the moment of building that out. We've got a couple of clients across the US and Australia, and we're now getting our third iteration of software together so we can start moving towards the UK and getting a foot in up there and getting some people interested.
So what's been the, I think I know, but what's been the sticking point for the UK? GDPR?
GDPR, yeah. Well, mate, I spent a year actually working in the law school at UWA on a paper which was all about privacy, data privacy and the like. And one of the big things I learned out about that was how strong the GDPR is with respect to not only its rules, but in fact, how they enforce things. So we're not in a position to do that. We've got a really, really strong data privacy model. And in fact, our new software is going to do stuff that nobody else is doing in sport, which is what they call data portability, which means let's say I had two teams, team A and team B, and a player moved from team A to team B. I can just click them and drag them straight across from one team to the other. All their history goes across the whole thing. So that level of data portability has taken quite a bit of work, but where I'm personally super focused on athletes' data privacy because of what I did when I was at the UWA Law School and what I understand about how data moves. And particularly, mate, as you know, this grey is very real. I've been around a long time. So I've been in pro sport since pretty much 1998, somewhere around there. So we were doing nothing back then. We were writing things down with a piece of paper and a pen and a stopwatch, and that was it. But now we've got so much data moving around, and we've not always been great with managing the privacy of athletes. Athletes have got their data all over the place. So, yeah, we're working really hard to keep that tidy and make it extraordinarily secure and optimized for players.
This isn't the crux of the conversation, but I think it's a really interesting one because it does come up every now and again, the data privacy thing. I can't believe it hasn't blown up, especially over here.
It's going to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I was at Catapult in 2017 and couldn't believe that it wasn't happening then. And we're 6-7 years down the line, it's still not happened with players going, you know, a big player saying no to a certain data collection, or I want to own it and I want to filter what you get, or anything of the sort. Yeah.
All those rules are in GDPR, and they're all, and you go to the States, they don't have a GDPR, but they have similar things, but then they have it kind of by state. So it's more confusing because it's all over the place. Australia are not dissimilar to GDPR, but I think my personal opinion is it'll probably blow up at some point. Somebody will get pinged. A big team will get done. I don't think there'll be an agenda to that, but I'm sure someone will get pinged to say, well, this is the line in the sand. But certainly from my perspective, being now in that industry, that technology and data-based industry, yeah, we won't be getting caught up in that. Like I said before, we're working towards everything being ticked off and being rock solid. Like the athlete, mate, they can choose they don't have to put their name in it. They can call themselves Mr. X if they want. They can put in whatever gender they want. The whole thing, the data portability piece, even what we do with the data, we describe exactly, how we anonymize it and what we do with it. So yeah, companies are going to have to spend a lot of money. And I know my understanding is that there's clubs in Europe that now have compliance officers. They have people legitimately checking, saying, where is this data going? How's it saved? Because it's going to be big. I know the NBA are absolutely watertight on what you can and can't measure.
When you said mention about SpeedSig and taking one athlete if they move clubs, so that's from SpeedSig account to SpeedSig account. That's right. So what if one was, are you agnostic in terms of which GPS provider? Okay. So
yes, we are.
So what if one was a StatSports user and one was a Catapult user or Huddle user?
Doesn't matter. So okay. We work on bringing the data together and making a singular truth. All right, so we would convert StatSport data or Catapult data to a single data frame, data model, and then we go from there. So then we would take that data out. We capture the pieces that we need for our analysis. We throw everything else out, and then we have that captured as a body of data. So if somebody were to move, as that athlete went from Team A to Team B, we just pick it all up and put it across, and it's modulated. It's been built. You can't retrospectively do some of these things. These are genuine. You got to build it from the ground up, and you've got to know in the first place that's what you're trying to do. So we've engineered that sort of from the get-go.
I'm sure you've answered this question multiple times. Give us a story, backstory to SpeedSig. Why? Because there's always a problem. There's always a problem, and you need a solution that you can't find. So you think about creating it.
Yeah.
What was your problem?
Yeah. Look, so if I go back to the earliest days of monitoring data, I still remember the great Eddie Jones coming to my office in North Sydney when I was with the Wallabies and saying, I've been to, was it Inter Milan at the time, into the Milan lab?
Oh, AC.
He said, they're doing this, and this. AC Milan, sorry, not Inter. We're doing this, they're doing all these things. Well, I want you to do it. I said, okay, what's the budget? Nothing. Right.
Cheers.
So then it begins the process of, which I'm sure you'll get to later. All right, well, then what can we collect? How can we manage data? And around about that time, then the whole RPE thing sort of started and got some Aaron Coots wrote his first piece around, I think it was 98. I think I talked to him about that the other day, brought it up. He was a bit embarrassed. But it was a good starting point, right? And then RPE starts. And then a little bit down the track, we get heart rate monitors that can run live, and all of a sudden we can put them on in games, and we've got different pieces. So you start to build it out. But what you get to a point where you go, well, we've got all this stuff and we're doing things, but this guy got injured again. He's done his calf again, or he's got recurrent hamstrings. So it's got to be, at some point you go, well, what we're collecting's not really doing the job. It's not describing enough of our environment. And for us, and this is the crux with GPS, and everyone's fallen into it, myself included, is that we believe that, okay, we've got this wonderful thing, and it's telling us what the athlete does. It's telling us what reps, what distance, what speed, all those things. But it's not telling us how the athlete's doing it. And the human body is such a magnificent, redundant beast that if it can't do something one way, it'll find another way to do it. So you can still run at the same speed. But now it's starting to happen a little bit differently. because I can't do it the way I used to do it. Maybe I'm injured, maybe I'm getting older, maybe I've just got a cork and my quads, my VMO is not working the way it should do. So I start to muscle it out differently. And this is the story of how it starts, is by the time I got to AFL, I already knew biomechanically, I was working harder on running mechanics at the time, trying to ensure players ran better as a general model. But we started to look, and I got into the accelerometers and the gyroscopes and all the rest of it, and I started to say, well, we should be able to answer something about how the player's running, because I can see that there's a difference in certain players, and maybe I could communicate to some of my staff and they would go, yep, I get that. Some of my other staff couldn't get it. Like the physios mightn't get it, or the doc doesn't get it, or in many cases the coach doesn't get it. Now, I remember we had a player by the name of Michael Barlow, had a massive tib-fib fracture in his first year. He was going great, playing brilliantly, massive tib-fib fracture, enormous, like a car accident. Anyway, they got him back. We got him back into rehab and going. Anyway, it's at one point, he's coming through the ranks, and back in the day, there was this tick-off of if he can run 80% of his former maximum velocity, he's clear to go. He runs his 80%, and I'm looking at him going, he's galloping. That's horrific. That's not sustainable. The physio, the doc all go, yep, he's good to go. Coach comes over, yeah, he's good to go. He goes back in, and like within, I think he played a game and a half, maybe not even, massive hamstring strain on the same side because his legs, he's just grinding through on that leg. His ground contact time is massive. His heel striking. And all the things now we understand about how your leg approaches the ground, he couldn't do because we just hadn't got him there and we weren't down that path yet. So I started measuring it. That's where Speed6 starts. So back in 2013, I start trying to figure out how to do it. How can I do it with one sensor? And more so, more than anything, how can I do it at scale? Because my problem's always been, like I used to sit there with a camera like everybody else. And, we'd run past the camera. And then you sit in front of the camera and you go one frame, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards. And you try to convince yourself you're seeing something. Doesn't work. What does work, and this is where I started to get into statistics and become a real nerd a little bit later down the track, is you need more steps. You get lots and lots of steps, and then we start to be able to understand what normal is, and we can really model that pattern and understand normal so that when we see a change, we can evaluate, is that change real? Is there a difference left to right? Is that difference real? Is it significant? Does it mean something? And we can evaluate not just you versus yourself, which is what we call function, left versus right, but we can evaluate an athlete from a performance perspective. How do they rank against their similar type athletes, same size, body weight, position, maybe all those things. And then the big one is trend, understanding those changes over time. So I started wanting to answer the question, what else can I add to the mix? So we've got all this data, we've got all this stuff we do in the gym, we've got force plates, we got everything. We got Nord boards, we got everything back in the day. But it wasn't answering the questions. But so we start to add in this mechanical picture. And for me, all of a sudden, it started to light up the bells, it started to clear up. The picture became clearer. Why is this guy getting a calf strain? He's getting a calf strain because we're trying to push his running volumes and loads up, but he's got calf strength in the gym, came up, was low, it came up, but he hasn't had time to get it and build it into his running because he hasn't had time to convert that isometric, that slow contractile strength that he's developed in the gym into a more elastic property that you require for running. And then there's other stupid things like we would run, you would have a guy with this low-level injury and we'd say in AFL, we'll go out and we'll just do some tempo running. The tempo running puts the calf at the load that was the worst from the outset. So you end up creating more drama. So the idea was to start measuring so we could understand more about running in detail, understand the individual. So what is one person versus another? Because people don't all run the same. Not like a lot of the research, a lot of the magnificent research out there that's on small numbers of people will have you believe that it's kind of all the same, but it's not. Now, for track and field, it becomes very homogenous because they're at the top end of the market. But when you're in AFL, rugby, soccer, lacrosse, all these other sports where athletes don't necessarily run, you know, they're not elite runners in terms of sprint athletes. They've got their middle distance, they're intermittent, repeat speed athletes. They run differently. And there's great research to suggest that there are different patterns. You know, Aki Salo did stuff on stride frequency, stride length. James Wild's come out with a lot of stuff down that path. Prior to that, the Gindre is a researcher, did the aerial terrestrial thing, which I've used in my research to be able to validate what we've done, is to understand that some athletes want to go more up, some want to go more horizontally. And then you go a bit further and you go, well, funnily enough, there are athletes that actually want to go more sideways because their pelvis, you start bringing hip lock and the whole Franz Bosch like framework into it. It's actually not just anterior, posterior and vertical. It's medial lateral as well. So we measure hip lock. So trying to understand all those things in three dimensions, A, takes a lot of data, but B, you want to do it regularly and we want to do it covertly. So we don't want to waste time. The number one thing I hate is putting the timing gates out or the video camera out. Everybody stop training. Stop. One at a time, run past the gates. Coach, we're not training today. Mate, we're all wearing these units. Let's use the units every day. Let's measure it as much as we can. Then we have this bulk data from which we can make some real assessments of where the athletes are at. What's their pattern? I'm not just making something up. Here's a pattern I've got because I've measured, you know, a whole bunch of steps on this guy. I might have 100, 200, 300 steps as our baseline. So that's a long answer, mate.
No, it's a good, it's a great answer. It's super interesting. So back in the day, like 2013, when you try to understand all this, were you extracting the raw data and manipulating it to try to get what you wanted at that point? Then that's built into speed.
Yeah. So what I did was, I was trying to go from the thoracic mount, and for a number of reasons, I was technically doing everything myself. At one point, I had an engineer, and this probably leads to another part of the story, but I had an engineer working with me who told me, no, you actually can't do what you're trying to do. To which my response was, and because we're on video, I'll do this. Fuck you. So I...
That was a middle finger. I said no. A firm middle finger, by the way.
Yeah, it was very firm. It was very firm. So that's the point where I learned to code, because I said, well, I'm doing this. It must be a way. There has to be a way, because we've got these great sensors, great technology, which we're not using. Like, we're really not using gyros and accelerometers and all the rest of it. We're wearing these units all the time, and these athletes are running. So we've got to be able to understand. So that's where I learned to code, so I could extract the raw data and then start to answer my questions and figure it out. Now, it took probably 18 months. I couldn't do it from the top, but as soon as I put it on the lumbar spine, we really were able to increase our reliability through the roof. We've just published our validity and reliability 3 years after the fact.
On the lumbar spine.
In JSCR. JSCR, we published validity and reliability. That's just gone out. That's actually this January, I think this month. But it's just gone out. But once we were able to get, and I guess this was my thinking, was, well, let's do the PhD. And at least if you do a PhD, maybe I could be a teacher or something after, whatever. But if it works, it means I've had to get three people independently to review it. Then I get it published, and that's more people have to review it. So then you've got to start to conclude, well, maybe I'm close to being right. So that's what we've done. We've really pushed on the scientific angle, which as a businessman is not great, because I'm not a very good businessman. I'm better as a scientist than I am a businessman. But it means that we have really high confidence. So when I share data and when I analyze data with teams and we see change, we can be confident that the change is real, because I've made the methodology highly reliable. Our reliability is all above, it's 0.91, 0.92 within and between sessions. So it's very, very high. And our analytic model and the analytic models that we use able to detect real change. So we can be confident that if that change starts to occur, we can say, yes, there's been a change. We need to now cycle back through the process of, you know, the high performance model. How do we, well, you know, we need to evaluate him from a medical perspective, training overload, but now we start to get a picture of what this kid is. And I'm happy to say that we've had great success. I've had success personally, which is one of the weird things. I built it to answer my question, and that's quite serious. I found as a coach, I wasn't good enough. I didn't think I was good enough. I mean, you're never good enough. But if you can answer more questions and provide a better service to your athletes and be better at what you do, then you're offering more to your team. You're offering more. More importantly for me, you're offering more to the athlete, because I got a real sense that, not a real sense, but a strong belief that the athlete's putting their trust in you. So there's got to be respect for that. And I think most coaches are very, very good at it. They do respect highly. I think that's one very good thing about our industry. But I just put more pressure on myself to say I don't think I was good enough. There should be more. And that's why we answer. And I thought then, well, if that's my problem, if I've got it, surely other people have it. And then we slowly went out and talked to people. And now we're at the point where, yes, we know everybody has the problem. But now's the question of, what do you want to do about it? So I've been working with a couple of practitioners, particularly in the US, a couple in Australia, who are awesome. Like, I'm talking the sharpest cats that I think are currently in the field at the moment. And they're just picking things up. And they're now coming back to me saying, hey, we did this, this, and this with SpeedSig. I had one of my AFL teams I reviewed just after the season finished couple of months ago, and they sat down and listed the things they'd done. I was like, wow, this is awesome. At some point I should do a podcast and get them to talk about it. But that's what you want. You want, like, this is maybe what you were experiencing before, is if I can provide something that gets someone to that level and then they take it another level on, it gets stronger. Right? It's the old saying, you know, I see far because I stand on the shoulders of giants. Well, right, your job is, we're educators, and I've always thought that, right? If I can help someone get up on my shoulders and look further because I'm providing a good service, that's gold, you know, and I really feel that. And that's what, at the moment, the most enjoyable thing about SpeedSig at the moment is that I've got the chance to meet these other guys. Like I said to you before, you know, Zach Higginbotham at Cal Berkeley, Terrence Cannell down in University of South Florida, all the guys, Nick Lumley, and the boys down in Melbourne Rebels, Luke Vella, who's now the HPM down there, my old buddy Damien Marsh up in the Reds. Like, they're smart cats. They really get it. And then they challenge you. Like, Marsh is brilliant. He harasses me. Like, hard questions. And you get a real, and if you can stand up to that rigor, then you think, well, okay, we're in the right place. We're going okay. So again, long answer, mate.
It's great. It's good. When I was at Catapult, the data science team was relatively small at the time. It's grown since then to 2017. But
yeah,
why wouldn't they do this themselves? Because were they doing it? I have a vague memory that they were trying to do something like this themselves.
They did. Yeah, they did. They did. So the main difference, and this is another theme that I get onto periodically, there's a difference between a data scientist and a sports scientist, right? And the main difference is, once you get down to it, is you've got to know your beast. So I went and did the research. I collected my data set for my PhD, had nearly 30,000 samples. So I'm not talking like I had 10 subjects and we did three things. And I had 30,000 samples. I had a lot of data. And I went through and went over and over and built this thing out till it worked. Now, if you go to someone who doesn't understand running and doesn't really understand, like, they could work at Cap, but like the engineer I spoke to, he said, no, you can't do that. We can't do it because you weren't motivated to figure it out and you didn't really know what you were looking for. So I don't doubt the Catapult, the guys I've met and been around at Catapult from a data science perspective, super smart, but they've not been in the field doing what I do, right? And I'm not saying I'm the be-all and end-all, but the guys who solve our problems, and I say our collectively, the S&C environment, the guys who are going to solve our problems are typically going to be from our domain, yeah? Like you can make equipment that measures stuff but doesn't do anything. You know, people still have to figure it out. The research still has to be done to try and to validate what we're doing and to make sense of it. And then to be able to plausibly put it together, right? So that's why, I mean, Catapult did try to make a running module, but it was so abstract. It was three-dimensional. It was all over the place. Like, I couldn't figure it out. Now, I'm not the brightest spark by any stretch, but I'm also no dummy. And I couldn't figure out how it worked. Now, one of the key things I try to concentrate on, one of the three components of SpeedSig, is the third one, is communicate. We need to have a system that plausibly allows us to communicate. Now, this is where we get on my high horse, right? Because medical teams, and everyone will know this, you're starting to get S&C and the physios here or athletic trainer, physical trainer in the US, there's this overlap, right? Now, I'm fine with that. I know some physios who are awesome running coaches. More power to you, buddy. All good. But if you're going to get into that space, you need to be able to communicate clearly what it is that you're seeing, doing, and evaluating. Now, for us, and for where I was at the time, I needed to be able to communicate to other physios, docs, people who don't really, not really into running, in a simple way, this is what's happening. And I can validly represent it because I've got this many steps. We've modeled a baseline. Here's the change, blah, 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 blah. All right, scientific method. So it becomes at a point where it's just the evidence is just so overwhelming and it makes it easy to add a decision. So if you're building something that's so abstract that no one understands it, what are you going to do with it? Right, it's like I build this gizmo I put in the gym, and everyone goes, "What the hell does that do?" You know, I love the videos. You know, the guy bounces on the ball, and he's got the weight squatting on the back, and he's got rubber bands. Who know what is that for? I don't know. I can't figure that out. So, mate, we profile, we monitor, we communicate. That's what SpeedSig does, and that's where if we can bring that together, if we can close the gap in that injury prevention rehab space between performance, so we call it performance and medical, close that gap. I see that a lot overseas at the moment, and there's a huge gap. In Australia, it's pretty tight. It's generally pretty tight. UK, I haven't had as much experience there, but US, I see some teams that are super tight. University of Southern Florida, unbelievable. But others... I won't say the team, but we'll say that they're still playing at the moment in college football. They're horrific. They're like polar opposites, man, between the rehab under the athletic trainer and then the S&C staff who know running. One of them knows it really well, sharp cat, but he's not allowed to work with the other guy. And the data that we've collected so far, I've helped him go back and say, look, maybe we should be looking at something a little bit different because there's a big problem here, particularly when you're talking about things like ACLs coming back and stuff like that. You know, there's some big holes there. So again, massive answer from me.
It's good. It's good. Stop apologizing. So take us through.
I'm like a wind-up toy.
No, you're all good. No, that's perfect for this. Don't you worry. So we're just going to take a very quick break in this chat with Jason. Hope you enjoyed part one. So over in part two, I ask a really interesting question. In given that he's been around so many clubs and organizations, understanding what they do, what would he change if he did go back in as a high performance manager? And I think that dragged out some reflections for Jason over the last couple of years. So a really interesting part two with, I think, a great question coming up. This episode of the Pace to Performance podcast is sponsored by RockDaisy. RockDaisy's athlete management system provides a powerful competitive advantage to elite sports leagues around the world. If you're looking for a solution that enables you to centralize, analyze, and visualize your data, check out rockdaisy.com and sign up for a free trial. And now back to the episode with Jason. So take us through the data collection, because you mentioned about standardized tests, stop training, line up there. So that's not something that you do. But take us through that data collection. Okay, you do. So to take us through that data collection process and what coach you're going to get out of the back end, and then we'll move on to the how it differs to some of the new solutions on the market.
Yeah, sure. So it gets a little bit, we get into the weeds a little bit. So from an acceleration and decel perspective, we can use the thoracic mount. For all our really heavy hitting biomech stuff, we're going to do from the lumbar mount. So if we just concentrate on the lumbar mount for the moment, the best time to profile your athletes is in warm-up, because the athletes are building. You know, you're going to do some speed work. Not every warm-up's the same, but most warm-ups have a component where we're going to straight line run, we're going to build them up. Now, because SpeedSig measures, the way we do it is we measure at different velocities, and we create, fundamentally, we create a regression analysis for everything, right? But those constant velocities, we just capture a nice smooth range. So as the athlete accelerates up and they hold, we capture that middle piece. Now, it's pretty easy to do, but it's really easy to do in warm-ups, because from a coaching perspective, from a team sport team coach, they're not looking. They don't really care. So what we're doing is we're warming them up while the athlete's building. And I'm a big fan of Dan Pfaff. And Dan says the best movement screen is warm-up. Let's measure it. Let's capture it while the athlete's not really worried about it. So we put the lumbar belt on. The athlete can still have their thoracic mount on. They'll go through their warm-up. And as you build in, you might get some speed reps in. And we build that up, and we pick that up over time. Today, you might only go to 80%, but then we might assess again on Friday. Let's say we do it 2 days a week. Then on Friday, we're going to put a couple of big, quicker reps in. So we capture them, and we start bringing them all together. But it's the same idea as taking HRV. HRV is effective when you do it 4 times a week. It's been shown categorically. If you do it once a week, it's like, eh, what is it? But if we get it regularly, but we're doing it at a time where no one really cares, it's time we're doing anyway, but we're measuring the things that we're doing effectively. So that's our basic model. There's so much else we can do. I mean, I've built out some stuff for some of the college teams, you know, 505 tests and all sorts of decel, and there's a whole bunch of stuff there. But the fundamentals, if we get that understanding each athlete's, that pattern down pat from the outset, then you've got this great model to say, well, as the athlete gets stronger, what impact does that have on their running? As they get fitter, what impact does that have? Do they change? What does it look like? Does their gait change over the course of a session as they fatigue? We know part of my PhD study was looking at athletes across the course of an AFL year, from all the way through preseason through into the in-season period. We know ground contact got worse towards the end of preseason. Makes sense, right? But what are you doing about it? And what if you understand, and then you start to look at year to year and say, well, okay, we can accept this amount of change, but you know, a 5% dip's okay, but we know that once it starts dipping down further, we start to see problems. Which comes back to that fundamental idea of, when we're trying to monitor our athletes, we need to build big patterns, because you can't just measure something for 5 minutes and then try and understand what you've got. You need to build big patterns. And if you take it all the way back to the data privacy piece and to the bigger picture, is clubs should be building these databases over years. Like, I can't stand the concept that, and I'm seeing this in the US at the moment, is that there's a sports science or a performance guy in there, and he's building lots of good stuff, putting together a good system. And then for whatever reason, let's just say he moves to another team because he wants to make a change, but the whole system goes. And then they bring someone else in and the whole system changes. I'm like, that's just madness. Teams should be focusing on developing a good strategy long-term. And then as people come into it and out of it, the strategy might change a little bit, but it doesn't go from Olympic lifting to CrossFit, right? That's what we're talking about. Anyway, again, long, long answer, but it all comes back to, I just feel like the whole monitoring piece, the more you can just have little bits of data regularly. Training is testing. Testing is training. The old Kelvin Giles drilled it into me, right? Training is testing. Testing is training. Just measure it along the way. Because if you do testing, again, that's the whole, I test, you know, we're going to test on January 20. But on January 20, your older player, bub, didn't sleep overnight. Someone else has got a cold. So then what data does that represent? What output? You know, so that piece, I've got a professor mate of mine, very big on, yeah, we should be testing covert. We should be as covert as possible. And what better way to do it? If you're wearing triaxial accelerometer gyroscope, let's measure it.
Where did you work with Kelvin, by the way? Did you work with Kelvin?
So I met Kelvin probably around about 2002, the end of that. He was at the QIS. I met him while I was with the Wallabies, and at that time I actually met him and we conversed. I actually presented some of my World Cup planning for the 2003 World Cup to him. I said, what do you think? Look, literally, I've got this crazy idea. We had this opportunity to go a certain way, given that we'd been dusted by the All Blacks by 52 points in the June of that year before a November World Cup or October. So, yeah, I met him around then. Then he came to work at he was working in rugby. He worked at Australian Rugby, so we just crossed paths in that. But, great man, very, 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 very solid operator.
He came to do, I think it was 1 or 2 days in Sheffield. But we're not too far off. Oh, no, it was, when would it have been? Probably 10 years after that, 2012, 13 maybe. And he was great. He was great. Really good, really good. Next question for you. Computer vision and AI solutions come on the market, couple out there right now. How does SpeedSig differ to that? What are you getting that they're not? What are they getting that you can? What are the differences?
Look, I have to. I mean, clearly they're competitors of mine in a way. I'm not interested in one-off stuff. So Stu McMillan's had a look at what I do, and he's doing his thing with his product. My thing's really around team sport because I want to be able to capture team data and I want to help teams work because that's where I come from. I'm not a track and field coach. I'm nothing like that. I'm a team sport guy, right? And if you break it down, rugby, AFL, soccer, that's the three things I've done. So my model and my intent is to figure out how can we manage these large groups of people on a regular basis. So the number one thing difference with us is we're scalable. So we wear the units every day. If you want it, I've got one of my AFL guys, teams are testing almost every day. They're collecting data every day. It's just they're trying it out. They want to see how things go. Now, if we said we're going to stop and run in front of a phone every day with 50 athletes, it ain't going to work. It's not going to happen. Right. The other really important part for me is the modeling of the data. So it's not just the data capture. It's what do we do with it and how do we statistically analyze it? And we've put a lot of time into how that works and into how we build our baselines and how the user can create different baselines. So a baseline might be, you know, when a kid comes in when they're, let's say they're 17, and then you might create another one when they're 19, 20 as they've got stronger because their performances have just gone up. So we want to model that new baseline and the poor kid breaks his leg. Well, then you're probably going to need to create another baseline there as things change to understand where things are at. Anyway, the modeling and how we statistically analyze things is crucially important to me. The machine learning models that I've built behind all of this are huge. Right, they're massive, and we keep iterating on them, right, to really understand what's important and what's not. All right, because obviously you can collect. In my first run in my PhD, I think I had 35 variables, something like that, all scattered. Like no one wants to hear all that, all right? And then down the track, there's probably going to be core elements of what we do where some things are not as important as we think. Now, things like thigh angular velocity. Now, thigh angular velocity, because of the mathematical way we calculate it, it's not a direct measurement. But in the same breath, it's a really cool coaching tool. And it makes great sense for a coach to deliver to an athlete and has huge impact on ground contact time. Now, you asked the question about the videos. Can the video do that? Look, I've actually, one of my PhD students worked in POSE, and that's the methodology that they utilize to do joint estimates. The accuracy can be variable at different times, and I don't know what the accuracy is in those systems. I will say that a couple of the guys that I know that have compared my data to their data, they think we're more reliable. And again, I've published my reliability. So I've put my hand in my heart on this side and shown, put my data out there and said, this is what we do. This is our system. So yeah, there is some differences. Now, we can also do three dimensions. We don't need two cameras because we have a triaxial accelerometer. And when you put it on the lower back, you start to see all sorts of things happening with the pelvis. Like I said, with hip lock, like we can see how that works. Now, again, I guess the long and the short of it is they're doing their thing over there. We're doing our thing. And my focus is really on team sports. So there's a few differences, but they're doing some great stuff. People seem to be happy with it. And I think at the end of the day, Rob, what I would be strong in saying is that not every solution is going to suit every environment. You know, it really comes down to where you're at as the leader of the group or an environment. Now, you might resonate with what I've got to talk about. That's cool. You might resonate with what somebody else is selling. It's fine. I think what we're trying to do at the moment is really work with those that are hearing our message and work really closely, right? And I spend a lot of time with my clients to make sure that what we're doing is accurate and it's working for them and it fits their system. So yeah, I hope that clarifies it.
Definitely.
Or at least explains our side of it.
Absolutely. No, that's cool, mate. That's cool. Right. So you've come out. Go on, mate. Were you going to say something then?
I was just going to make the point, probably, mate, just because you made that, you talk about AI now. It's interesting. AI is clearly a component of how POSE works, but I think one of the things that, like, we've just started an AI project with Curtin University, what we're doing. Now, the thing with AI is it's really about helping increase comprehension and communication. That's what it's ultimately going to do for us to be able to say, well, hey, you know, because the level of noise, so our new system has three levels, right? It's like got alert, information, and then the really deeper level. So you've got to help people understand data. We're building a big education system to now go with ours because no matter which way you cut it, not everybody spent time learning running mechanics. And because you're an S&C coach and you did a master's degree at whatever university, man, I didn't learn anything about that. Like I learned running mechanics from people like Kelvin Giles, Adam Larkham, great sprint speed coach down in Melbourne, worked the Australian track and field for years. I learned mechanics off those guys. You tend to learn it off those people. Then you apply all the research, the Peter Wayne, JB Morin, all those cats. So great, great research. Aki Salo, I mentioned earlier. Great research. But my ongoing beef with that is that they do all this great research, but then there's no way to use it in the field because we can't measure anything. You know, there's all this great work that these researchers have done. So hopefully I've been able to create some sort of conduit between, like, yes, I'm not absolutely doing the lab quality that they've got, but I've certainly got enough that we can get good indicators and we can create some really good interface of information that adds to the mix of what we're already doing. And that's really the point, is trying to add to what we're doing to complete the picture where we can.
Perfect. Right, I'm going to move on slightly. I think this will be an interesting one for me personally because I've had a little bit of experience of this. And it came about seeing that Matt Pell, someone that I've had a couple of interactions with, but you know far better than I do.
I know Pelly real well.
He used to work for Catapult in the US and has now gone to work in the MLS for Charlotte. And I think it's a big thing for people like practitioners who maybe get to a point in their life and want to transition and do something, want to be involved but don't want to be direct with the team, so maybe go work for Vald or Catapult or someone, but then think it's a risk because they might not be able to get back in. Now clearly Matt has done that because he's come out to go to Catapult and then come back to go to Charlotte, but you've done a similar thing, not to say you're going to go back in, but you've come out and now you're visiting loads of different teams, you're speaking to loads of different people, you're seeing loads of different systems, some of you've mentioned there, and understanding what people are doing out there. So taking all that over the last couple of years, how would you change should you ever go back into high performance manager role, what would differ?
Oh, okay.
What would differ?
Well, I think that there's two things. And given that you gave me some notes earlier on, I did have a real good think about this. The things that I would change, like number one, there's no question I'd be using SpeedSig because that answers such a huge question for what I had for so many years. I'd be putting that in. But that obvious one aside, I'd probably lead you down the path real quick of saying why would I use SpeedSig? And I think because it's impacted the way I coach. Because I built it to solve a problem that I saw, an inadequacy I felt I had in my coaching, I thought it changed the way I coached. So, I mean, I had a big ACL in soccer who I actually, because of COVID and all the rest of it, I ended up managing from day one all the way through. There was hardly any, no physios.
that was two thumbs up.
but yeah. But the challenge with that, what happened was as I'm measuring, and I just was capturing data to see, and that's when I learned, hey, we're seeing hip lock here, right? We can see this kid's the reconstructed limb. We can see his pelvis drop, and then we can see now, and I often show this when clients, you know, we present and we pitch, I show the data coming together, how over time that hip data cleans up and we get performance, but it takes more effort than you think. And when you don't know it's there, and I see heaps of clients miss that. But this ACL in particular, what I learned from him was I had these standards of strength and even jumping off boxes and all that, that I thought these were the right markers. But then as we're going along, I could see he actually wasn't strong enough. So we were doing deceleration. And I could see that he wasn't decelerating where he needed to be. And the simple conclusion was, this kid's not strong enough. We pushed him. And I pushed this kid further than I've gone before. Now I've done, I think at last count, I'm about 27 ACLs. And I had a lot of good success. But this kid, I think, has been the best by far. He came back the next year, has not had a blink of an issue. Really flew, but I did things differently, reliant upon what I was seeing when he ran and when he decelerated and when he accelerated and all those sort of things. So we saw the huge change with that. The other example would be I had an Achilles this year, which was with Australian Rugby Union, and unfortunately didn't get to the World Cup, not because he was injured, just didn't get picked. But I oversaw part of that rehab. But what we saw was that the practitioner on the field, who in fact was a physio, they'd got some really good strength gains in the gym. And then he just went, right, he's good to go on the field. And as soon as he tried to go quick, you could see this drop in that side, his vertical force production, or basically a vertical force surrogate, to be a bit more specific, on that limb. And I said, look, man, your strength stuff's great, but you've got a time lag before when that becomes effective on the field. You've got to he's got to reconnect. He's got to get, it's a biomotor ability. We have to be able to transfer that contractile, that isometric slow strength, and get the elasticity back. And I said, I reckon you've got another 14 days. Just go slow. Just keep it the same speed. Did that, jumped up, everything went really well. But again, had that been left to its own devices, I don't know where that would have ended up. But I asked myself the question, have I rushed that in the past myself? Because I didn't know. And this kid came through, went great. And his first, second game back, did his fastest PB'd speed in a game ever. So we had to have done, and there's obviously outcome bias possible to that. I'm not saying we're the be all and end all, but that would make a difference. So yeah, I'd use SpeedSig. The other thing that I would do differently, in the latter stages of my career, particularly in the latter points of AFL and then with my little period in soccer, I think I confused the fuck out of everybody. I think I went too far.
In terms of the data that you've collected and tried to communicate?
Give us some examples. Things like I was trying to bring more information to singular plots, and I was... the information was there and all of my peers, my staff could see it and were liking it. But explaining some of them to country bumpkin coaches, like literally who have high school education, It's a little bit rich. It was a bit much. So I think if I went back now, and you talk about Pelly. Yeah, I've been working on some other models that if I went back into teams, I would do. I've got a data fusion model that I would use to simplify one data point, right, that brings multiple feeds of information together to say to a coach, hey, if this goes above this level, now he's in sort of new ground. He's breaking new ground, which is okay, but we won't want to be breaking new ground 2 weeks before the grand final. Let's put it that way, right? We want to keep that under control and blah, blah, blah. And so I think if I went back again, I would be trying to, in the back end, be more and more complex and do more work, but bring into a much simpler answer. I think we've got to be simpler. And I think one of the limitations that we've seen with Speedster, I've seen, is I've tried to continue to simplify the story because I can, it's like the Matrix. Like, it's all I do is look at the code and I can read it all. I see it all. It's no problem. But that's unfair because somebody, let's say you're running a team, you're doing 25,000 other things that I'm not doing. And I need to make it simpler. So that's what we're trying to do. And I think that's the essence of really good data science, is being able to take those steps from data, information, to knowledge. And they say wisdom is the last step. I don't know if I would get that far, but we get it to the point where people can look at it and understand it. And it's, you know, the perfect example is Apple. Right, Apple phones and things don't come with instructions anymore, pretty much. There's one or two cartoons and off you go. If you could make our data that simple, that's what I would do. So that's what I would be working towards. And that's, like, I've written that article for you earlier in the year, and I think as a manager...
The coding one?
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I was a manager and I had young sports scientists, number one, I'd have guys who could code and manage data and do it all the right way and data privacy and all the rest of it. But I'd be pushing them to say, we need simple methods. We need methods that we can communicate clearly, more clearly than I've done in the past. And I think it's one of those things where you look at it and you think, yeah, I'm doing this really well. And then you take a year out of it and you come back and go, maybe I was just confusing everybody. And because I'm bigger than everybody, they just get intimidated and
get bullied.
Yeah, bullied out of it. I don't mean to, but no, I think that's legitimately, again, when I'm looking around at the moment, what I see, and I have the privilege of talking to a lot of teams, I think the ones that are doing it the best are the ones who are really refining down the features, refining down what they're communicating. They're getting to their coaches early. I mean, in my Two Coaches and a Coffee podcast with Berger, Darren Burgess, if anyone knows who that guy is.
No.
So Burgess said to me, he was at some club and he said, whatever it was, I walked in the coach's office and I put up this piece of paper on the wall and I said, that's what we're going to look at. When we're under stress and everything's going, it's all, the fires of hell are burning and we're all getting cooked, we're going to look at that, right? So I need you to always refer back to, that's our fallback position. And I kind of thought, you know, right, I think I could be clear in saying that in one of my later iterations, maybe in AFL, I just kept going. I just kept pushing the boundaries further and further and further and just lost some of the staff around me, which was bad. You know, it's not good. So I think to be better, I think that's the path I would be doing. And I think there are some guys out there that are, and guys and girls, to be very clear, there's some female sports scientists, one in particular I know, two that I really know well, that I think are doing an awesome job. Really, really good.
Let's hang there for a minute. You'd have to mention, well, it'd be good if you mentioned names, but don't feel free to say no if you're not comfortable. Who have you been super impressed with? You've mentioned Zach at Cal Berkeley. You've mentioned
Zach, yeah.
TK down in Florida.
Terrence Kennell, yep. TK.
Any others out there who are doing really good stuff?
I think Devin Woodhouse up in Michigan. So he's still alive up there. I think
this
he's
is not just speed sig related. This is across the board or just speed.
Oh, no. I think I think obviously they're doing some really good stuff with SpeedSig. I think, but I think as more globally, I think their approach, the way I see them operate, and I've had the privilege in a couple of those environments to work across all domains. So the coach has been in and the medical staff, and see where they position themselves. I think they're awesome in that regard. I think Luke Vella down at Melbourne Rebels, I think is extraordinary. He's doing a great job. He's in his first year as a HPM. He's really doing a good job. And again, pushing the barrier. I think the really hard thing, and this is where it gets challenging, when you're in an environment which is probably struggling a little bit for finance, okay, so what do we do? We've got to cut some things, or we ought to start doing them ourselves, which falls back to that piece of, well, if you asked me in that coding thing, that coding article, if you were by yourself, what would you do? Well, I'd learn to code. That's what I did when I went to A-League soccer. I wrote the software for the whole joint. That's just what we did. We had all of our medical data through it, everything. And that's desperation, mate. People say to me, how do you get all this done? And that, I'll tell you, simple, desperate. Because if you don't get it done, then I don't keep my job, or I don't get the next thing. And I know with SpeedSig, I constantly feel like I'm fighting for the right to talk to teams. I've got to prove we're good enough. I've got to prove it all the time. Every single meeting we take, it's like the last meeting that's ever going to happen as far as I'm concerned. You've got to fight for them. And I think that's what makes practitioners, if you can start to think, think beyond the job you've got. How do I get the next job? How do I keep this job? I've got to be really good at it. And I can tell you now that even my view used to be, I've got to be so good that no one would ever get rid of me. That was always my view. But it happens, and you're not there. In the military, they call it admin betrayal, right? Where they just go, fuck it, it's time for change. Out the door, right? Now, it happens. But you've got to be good enough to have a skill set to bounce on. And that's why I know we've talked the coding thing before. I'm certainly of a mind to say, yeah, the more skills you've got, the more capable you are of survival. And our environment's tough, man. It's tough. And I'm really, I've told you, I love what you've done, like creating a new space. I love what Pelly and those guys, Pelly's gone out to Catapult, he's come back into it. I think he's gonna do a great job. I think there are others that have moved in and out. People are looking. Mate, one of the biggest questions I get all the time, how do I get out? Well, I said I got pushed out of a plane at 50,000 feet. I got a parachute, came with me. That was my PhD, right? I didn't have it on. I had to go and get it while I was falling. But yeah, it's skill set, transferable skill sets. That's the key to survival, if I can say that I'm surviving.
I think that's a good place to finish. Just under the hour. 15 seconds under the hour.
Cool, man.
But thank you very much for coming on again. I can't remember how many
times.
Been
a pleasure, Rob.
Second, third, third.
I think third. I think there was one. I think there was the really early one.
Yeah,
there was one in between.
Something. Yep.
I don't know, man. I don't think I had a grey beard back then.
I didn't think ginger people went grey, but with a 2-year-old, they definitely do. I can attest to that.
Well, I can tell you, mate, from a S&C perspective, you're not there yet. You need to lose the lid.
Yeah,
that's the look, man. Everyone. I had a quick podcast with Justin Lima over in the States a little while ago, and we got on, and I went, dude, I'm looking in a mirror, like bald head, beard. And he was carrying a baseball bat too. So interesting cat.
Right, mate. Anyone wants to check out SpeedSig? Anyone wants to check out you? Where's the best place?
Yes, speedsig.com. Get on the website. I've just put up a new PDF. You can download it and have a look at everything. The simplest, what I want teams to do is just connect with me via email. get on a meeting with me. I want to talk to my clients. That's my thing. I want to meet with my clients, keep them tight and show what we're doing and really get into it with them. And yeah, we're really living the path at the moment. Like every one of my teams, I know what's going on with, and there's probably a limit to how far that'll go. But I've got a couple of guys that we're already looking at coming on with staff, and they are sharp cats. So certainly looking in the States, hopefully, all things being equal in the next 6 months, it'd be really cool. But there's some great people out there. But that's our model, is we want to work closely with our clients and really educate. Like it's more than just data, right? It's what we do with it, and it's how we integrate it into the, like we're doing so many good things. Speed Sig's like this little piece of information that's just missing. And if we put that in, you know, it's like trying to do a cube with one piece of the cube missing. It just doesn't work. We plonk that puppy in there and away you go.
Perfect.
So, mate, appreciate your time, mate. It's always a pleasure, Rob.
My pleasure. Likewise. Thanks, mate. Speak soon. Thanks for tuning in to episode 479 of the Pacey Performance Podcast. Big thanks to Jason for giving up his time for a third time to come on the Pacey Performance Podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to speak to him, whether it's been recorded or it's just a general chat about what's going on with Speed Sig. I really appreciate his time, his knowledge, experience, and how candid he is with what he's been doing over the last couple of years. Big thanks to Vile Performance, to Rock Daisy, and Team Builder for sponsoring this episode today. The podcast could not run in its current form without these guys, so I really do appreciate all their support. Big thanks to you for tuning in. I look forward to chatting to you next time.